The destruction of the individual critical faculty is an interesting subject in itself. In the first stage of an artistic creation, suppressing the critical faculty can be very useful in increasing confidence and undermining conceptual inhibitions. But in the next stage, there is loss of ability to correct and develop the work and to place it in a wider social context. The initial conceptual inhibitions that need to be overcome are often socially inflicted. It might be argued that right-wing artistic forces create arenas of steeplechasing, where it is necessary for the artist to risk damage and death in a charge at artificial barriers. Whilst Forbes had an acute perception of the nature of right-wing forces in national and party politics, I'm not sure if he was sufficiently aware of their influence in his own life. Seeing beyond the microcosm to the macrocosm doesn't necessarily involve surviving by cinching the two together. The other literary figure analysed in the Death by Persona essay was Les Murray, and I was wary of the conservative, mystic right wing of the country party persona he had inhabited. I remembered that he had told me his mother always called him Leslie, and in the essay I suggested that it would disinhibit his work if the Les persona were abandoned in favour of work by Leslie, the man. The Death by Persona essay did not consider Martin Johnson, who it seems to me necessary now to discuss. Johnson was the son of the writers Charmian Clifton George Johnson. His mother had pushed the Overton window enormously to the left by writing a very popular column for the Sydney Morning Herald women's section and opposing in it the Vietnam War and the Colonel's coup in Greece. Both parents were famous and fine writers. They had lived lengthily and very publicly in Greece, and Martin was brought up there. When I met him, Martin had already been a cadet reporter on the SMH and had a persona as his parents' even more left-wing poetic son. He wrote a memorable program for ABC Radio on the Klephts, fierce pre-19th century Greek hillsmen who fought the Ottoman Empire, and that was clearly where his heart lay. When I met him, both his parents were dead. Carl Harrison Ford had sent me an enthusiastic review of my work Martin had written in a university newspaper, where he asked if it were illegal for a poet to think, placing me on the same shelf as John Tranter and declaring, "Jennifer Maiden, I love you, whoever you are." I took the statement to mean he thought I was writing under a pseudonym, a lot of people did then, but I suspect it was a source of embarrassment to him when I turned out to be real, female and about a year younger than he was. We were both at a meeting of the Poetry Society, my first, and he unexpectedly nominated me for an office in it. I didn't win. At that point, he was part of the movement that championed experimental art over representational, writing in one review, "If you want to communicate, use a telephone." But there are always qualifications to that if an artist's movement towards clarity or simplicity involved an improvement in quality or a refreshing of direction. I remember him telling me eagerly how Borges' final writings had left the labyrinths and returned to the simple plots and settings of the Argentinian countryside. Borges' complexities tended to support and be supported by the right wing, of course, and that may have been a factor in Johnston welcoming the change. My second memory of meeting him is that we were both sitting on a carpet, which had been borrowed from David Malouf, at the Tranter's house. He offered me a drink from his flask, which someone had given him at a party, and which he thought contained a mixture of alcoholic spirits. This confirmed for me his recklessness regarding alcohol, as I had already heard several stories about him being alcoholic, even though he was only 22. He was 42 when he died of alcoholism, beloved by his family and friends, and having produced some admirable and unique works of poetry and prose, and some brilliant translations of unlikely foreign movies for SBS. I remember hearing an idea among his friends that they thought it would have been better if his intellect and talent had found what they considered a more suitable setting overseas, and he did spend some time in post-Colonel's Greece, but there really didn't seem any home for him but Australia. Despite his deep grief for his parents and therefore his internalising their addiction, it seems to me that there is a basic political element in his destruction.